academic integrity in online teaching environments. What do instructors need to know? Surviving the abrupt shift to online instruction probably dominated most instructors' thoughts in the weeks immediately after the closing of the physical campuses in March. As all of us move beyond survival mode and finish grading exams and final projects, academic integrity issues may have cropped up. Even in the pass-fail grading environment we're working in, these issues don't go away. So we are doing this podcast as a companion piece to the article we wrote for the U of A's Quad blog that's available at blog.ualberta.ca. In that article, Ellen Watson, an educational developer at the Center for Teaching and Learning at the University of Alberta and a PhD candidate at the Faculty of Education, and I take a look at how academic integrity issues transmogrify in the online environment. My name is Roger Graves, and I'm the Director of the Writing Across the Curriculum Program, Associate Director of the Center for Teaching and Learning, and Professor in English and Film Studies at the University of Alberta. Ellen, good to talk to you.
Thanks, Roger. It's great to talk to you. I'm excited to do this podcast because we've been getting a lot of requests and questions about academic integrity, specifically as it relates to assessment, and this is a way for us to reach more of our University of Alberta audience.
I'm sure it's really interesting to talk to all of those people. I think that one of the things that we tend to assume, though, is that we're all up to date and totally familiar with academic integrity. So, you know, what are the key points of academic integrity? I know that I tend to fade out on that from time to time. So let's rehearse first what it means in a face-to-face environment before we take a look then at how it changes in an online environment. So the basic principles for face-to-face instruction are summarized in the Dean of Students' Academic Integrity pages. Number one, make your expectations about integrity clear and explicit. Number two, engage your students in a discussion about academic integrity. Number three, make sure the academic integrity policy is explicitly stated on your syllabus. And number four, give examples of times when you personally struggled to do the right thing in your academic work. So, Ellen, let's start with this question. What do you think students know about academic integrity?
In short, Roger, not as much as they should or as we hope they would know. There's a lot of confusion that comes across from various disciplinary boundaries, hearing about academic integrity from different professors, and as they take courses outside their major areas of study. So like you said, it's very important that we all make our expectations clear and explicit and explain what academic integrity really means.
I know anecdotally, I've heard from students that they'll say one prof said one thing on one course and another prof said another thing in a different course. And so I think as an instructor, our response to that has to be simply to say what our interpretation is and where our point is and move from there.
Yeah, I think it's really important in all aspects of education that we make our expectations really explicit, and academic integrity fits that as well.
Well, here's another question. How can we, quote unquote, enforce academic integrity?
That's a really good question, Roger, and a really tough one to answer. Of course, there is the Code of Student Behavior in place that can be used to enforce, if you want to use that word, when a student breaches that. But the best way to avoid infractions is to prevent them. So be clear about how the rules apply in your course context, how you intend to enforce those rules, have conversations about the rules and how you think they're going to play out, provide examples, and give advice specific to your assignments and your context.
That all sounds like really good advice, and it makes sense to me. Despite all of that, why do students take the risk and break academic integrity? And I guess I should say, why do some students take that risk and violate it?
Yeah, so as instructors, we all know that, you know, not all the students are going to break the rules. Some will not break the rules no matter what. Some are going to break the rules no matter what. And then there's a large majority between. We're thinking about how we can work with that middle group. It tends to happen on really high-risk assignments. So one strategy that I recommend to a lot of instructors is to use a lot of lower risk assignments in online courses as opposed to fewer big high risk assignments.
That's a really interesting idea. I think it has a lot of potential. I like the idea too of taking a big assignment and chopping it down to linked or nested parts of assignments. So you have a proposal for an assignment, you have an outline, then you have a draft, that kind of thing. So there's really three assignments as opposed to one great big one. You know, there's other good reasons to do that, but I could see how it would really fit with what you're saying.
Yeah, and it also allows for a chance for you to know what's going on with feedback and for you to see how students are progressing. And some instructors are concerned about they can't actually see that it's the student themselves submitting these assignments. But if you have a progression, you are going to see that it is the same person at bare minimum submitting those progressive assignments.
Yeah. No, that sounds, I like that as a strategy. Another question that comes up, and I'm sure you've dealt with this, is how do you assess if you can't use an in-person exam, especially with a large class?
Yeah, I don't think in online education that we're saying no exams. I think we're saying we need to think differently about what that assessment looks like. So I know a lot of instructors wanted to immediately jump on to proctoring services to make this examination process look as normal as possible, but we have to realize that we are not going to see that normal in the near future. So this doesn't even replicate the in-person exam. While you could do proctoring with exams, there's a lot of other strategies that you could consider. Things like open book exams are a great option, making sure your timing is really strict. Some people have turned to projects instead of examinations. It's all about measuring whether or not students have met the learning outcomes. And on the CTL's website, we do have a document about alternatives to formal exams. So I would encourage anybody who wants ideas to go and take a look at that.
No, that sounds like a really good strategy. What's that address again? It's just ctl.ualberta.ca?
ctl.ualberta.ca. One more thing that people might want to consider when they're using assignments, assessments, is to encourage students to have what we would call a metacognitive approach to their assignments, where they show you their reasons for decisions and processes.
Because that's really ultimately what we're after too, isn't it? It's to see them thinking through the problem, because that's how they're going to transfer that to other problems.
Yeah. Some examples that we've heard of getting students to show their thinking, those metacognitive processes, have been really innovative over the last couple of weeks. So for example, having students create a video while they're solving a problem and uploading that alongside their problem set. The instructor may or may not grade that video, but they can go and ensure that the student understands what they're submitting. Another one is to have students annotate their work as they're completing a problem set. So then you can read those annotations alongside their completion.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I mean, in a writing-based assignment, an equivalent kind of thing to do that I've used quite a bit in the past is to have students write a cover letter or a memo, and in that they explain what they were doing in the document that you're asking them to submit. And so it's not just that they write that document, but also they have to explain, you know, what they were trying to achieve in it. And so they can't write the cover letter memo, or it's really difficult for them to do that if they didn't actually also write that original document.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing if a student goes online and finds a solution to a specific problem. By having them include some of these annotations, they have to at least know what they've done to achieve that end and why they've done it.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, that's something where we're really adding something here that we probably wouldn't have done if we weren't doing this online. If we weren't online, we probably wouldn't ask them to write these sorts of metacognitive type things. And once we get them to pay attention to their learning, there's huge gains there. We know that that's already been identified from educational research studies many times. And so this to me is like a real opportunity to do something more than we would have done otherwise. Well, I think we've had a good conversation. Let's sum up what the takeaway messages are then. So number one, don't assume your students know what academic integrity is. Make sure you're having some kind of conversation about it. And in the blog entry, we talk about some specific ways you could do that. Number two, try something new, but recognize that you're going to have to grade that thing. So be prepared for that and have a strategy for it. Number three, contact CTL if you want some help for discussing a new assessment strategy, someone to bounce ideas off of. Now, these metacognitive strategies work doubly to both discourage cheating and to support metacognitive reflection, something we know improves learning. So as you reflect on your online experiences teaching so far, think about building in some rethinking space for your students. Don't give it a second thought. No, do give it a second thought. Well, thanks for listening. To learn more, consult our blog entry at blog.ualberta.ca
or contact me, Roger@weekendwrite.ca.